Kristen, you want to start us off?
I can tell you from experience that whatever you are in the middle of right now, if you can sit, go somewhere that it's quiet, go, if you love to kick a soccer ball, go out, kick a soccer ball, do whatever it is that you love to do, and think about looking at your situation differently. Can you look at it and find one glimmer of opportunity to change your life in a different direction from the punch that you just got hit with?
Mary Fran.
I would say, I mean, there's so many things going through my head, but I think I want to reference something that Kristen said earlier that we say all the time. You have to let go of what you think things should be in order to make room for what they could be. So, you know, again, and that has something to do with the perception too. Let go of what you think it should be and make room for what it could be.
Do you need encouragement to turn tragedies into your own triumphant life story? If so, this podcast is for you. Listen to powerful guests who have persevered through challenges so you can gain strength to build your championship life. The host of Professor of Perseverance Podcast, Dr. James Perdue.
Welcome to the Professor of Perseverance. I'm Dr. James Perdue, the Professor of Perseverance himself. Thank y'all for being here. Man, we have two people on today. I've never done two people on this, a three-person. Wow, this is going to be interesting. It's going to be fun, and we're going to all learn something. All right, we all go through something. We want to get through it and move on in life. Some of us get a little stumped in life and can't figure out how to get out of it. We're hoping this podcast will give you an example of how to kick your adversity, your challenge, your struggle, your difficulty in the teeth and move forward in life and be successful. Today, my two guests reading from their bio here, from how do you go from a dark pit of blindness and the death bed of heroin addiction. Wow. All right. Two topics here that we can really go after. We have on our show, ladies, thank you for coming in. Let me hit that button right there. Thank you for being here. We got Kristen Smedley and Mary Fran Bontempo.
Well done. Well done, James.
I had to make
well
sure done. I do that as best I could. So, ladies, thank you for being here.
Good stuff.
So thanks so much for having us. We're excited to join you today.
Oh, this is awesome. Again, I love sharing other people's, not only say share their struggles, but share how they got through their struggles so we can help other people in life. And I'm a firm believer, one reason, not all reasons, but one reason we're here is to help our fellow, can you say mankind anymore? Everything's switching to him and her and her kind and humankind is whatever. So to try to help each other is what I believe in. So I'm not going to jump in. I'm not going to flip a coin, but y'all have done this before. So I'm going to let y'all figure and tell me who's going to start off and we'll go from y'all. If you just give us your brief little Reader's Digest story, and then we'll move on from there.
So, well, Kristen and I, you and I were talking before the show, James, and Kristen and I met a number of years ago through a mutual friend, and we were both speakers, we were both authors at the time, and in getting to know each other better, we realized that we had both experienced major, what we call, Kristen called them sucker punches, I called them train wrecks in life.
There you go.
So we had experiences not in common in terms of the experience, but in terms of that kind of gut punch thing that happens that just sets everything off on a completely different path than what you thought. So as we got to know each other, we realized that we had used very similar strategies and processes to get through our experiences, which fortunately the worst of them were behind us at that point. But that actually gave us the time to sit there and talk about it and go, hey, wait a minute, I did that. And we realized that there was a process that we could share with people and teach with people. And the most basic common elements of it were we both recognized that we had inherent resilience, and we both found our personal brilliance within those awful experiences. So we joined together and we created Brilliantly Resilient as a program to do exactly what you said, to empower other people who are struggling. And we we kind of lived through it, right, Kristen, when our whole plan blew up last year in terms of going out and speaking to the world. And we kind of had to put it in practice again about that process of how you get through relying on your inherent resilience and discover your brilliance within.
Yeah, we are definitely, we always say that we are doctors of nothing. we don't have the advanced paper degree, but let me tell you something, Professor, we have got the experience extraordinaire going on. We have learned from literally being in the trenches, which is why I think our show has and our mission have caught on so fast over the worst time in the world in 2020 with the pandemic, because everybody was experiencing that sucker punch and really needed the strategies from people that not only went through it, but grew through it. And the key, smiling on the other side.
That's it. Yes. We've got to, once we realize the light at the end of the tunnel is not a freight train coming, boy, do we light up and go from there. Now, Kristen, let's go ahead and say, I'm going to bestow on you. And of course, it doesn't mean anything, but I'm going to bestow on both of you, Mary Friend and Kristen, that y'all have your resiliency PhD.
So, I'd say so. That's accurate.
Print that out. It's a transcript that I'll print out and put it on the wall.
There we go. Now, y'all both mentioned about the sucker punch and the train wreck and everything like that. But there's a lot of people, and I was part of when I first got my injury, that it wasn't the sucker punch and train wreck. It was, why me? Why poor, pitiful me? I don't understand. Get out of it. I mean, I had to force myself to get out of that, because whether I whine and cry or finally accept it and move on, life's going on without me, whether I'm doing anything. Yeah. So when y'all are talking about train wrecks and sucker punches, why didn't you do the why me, or did you do the why me and finally made your way out?
I think Kristen's story about her perception is key here. So I'm going to let her jump in and tell that story.
Well, thanks for that. And I will admit up front, I cheated a little bit. I am in awe of everyone and myself sometimes that can get yourself out of the sucker punch and the why me pit. But my very first big one, someone else kicked me out of it, thank God. So I was one of those people that, and probably a lot of your listeners and viewers are the same, that I make plans and I achieve them. That's just, you know, I set the goals and I go for it and with grit and grace, achieve it, right? And I had set up my whole life to achieve the stuff I wanted to achieve and did it. And I was living the literal dream that Hollywood would have had, like this amazing set of my life. And then I say everything fell into place right up until it didn't, because when I finally achieved my biggest dream in the world to be a mom, I had the most perfect, I mean, it was ridiculous perfection of the pregnancy and the plan for my baby's life ahead and the perfect house and perfect car and everything. So I say I had the perfect life, until this one day when a doctor told me otherwise, because he said to me, your son is blind. And that's when my first son was 4 months old. Now, Michael was the first blind person I had ever met. So I think that maybe some night we could have like a karaoke contest on the Why Me song, because I sang that sucker for 3 solid years of this kid's life, where it wasn't even just why me. I would add in a chorus of why him. Like, this just isn't fair. This is mean. It's insanity. And it was what, you know, seriously, why me, after I followed all the rules and did all the things. But I will say that it was my son, Michael, at 3.5 years old, that one day came in when I was having the biggest why me tantrum of all time. And he said to me, Mommy, isn't this the best day ever? And I thought, I actually said to him, are you kidding me? Like, let me ask you this. Why do you think this is a great day when look at your life? I'm thinking, I say it to a 3-year-old. And his thing was, he had everything he wanted and needed. And he said to me, the sun is up. I have everything. And I'm just so happy. And then I thought to myself, you know, here's the thing. I was looking at blindness as the biggest barrier and burden, as I'm sure everyone else does too, right? Michael, however, never knew anything different. He was living his little life exactly how he wanted. So of course his perception of the thing was, I have a great life. I'm doing everything I want. So in that moment, I would say, thank God that happened. It was my miracle moment that changed my whole perception of the journey. Did I still get pissed? Yes. He's 21 years old now. And I still, somebody didn't hire him last year because of blindness, because they haven't had that big awakening yet. So yes, it's still frustrating sometimes, but in the grand scheme, I mean, that little change in perception from that tiny little person changed the trajectory of our lives and opened my eyes to be able to look at his life like it is his life and his dreams and not my own. Tough for a mom to do, but once you do it and let go of, like Mary Fran always says, let go of what could have been and let, you know, room for, or let go of what should have been and leave room for what could be, it's been incredible.
I want to say good morning, Grant. Thank you for coming in for our show today. And Kristen, you're correct. And a good thing about, I mean, children ought to be getting PhDs before adults sometimes. I mean, Kahiri is waking you up on this epiphany of another way to look at life. For example, when I was in college working on one of my degrees, my roommate was born with cerebral palsy in a wheelchair, couldn't walk. And dumb me never thought of this. I said, hey, man, you ever miss walking? Well, how can you miss it if you never had it? That's what he said to me. Yes. So example, your son wasn't missing out on what he couldn't see because he hadn't experienced. He's living his life. Like you said, he's got everything. The sun's up, ready to go. So your children are amazing and they can give us a good awakening. It's just some of us as adults think we're too smart to listen to kids sometimes.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and my thing was I wanted the starting pitcher, the quarterback, the valedictorian. And I know that everyone has those hopes and dreams for their kids, and we do it in so much love for them, right? We want this bigger, better life for them. But that was actually the best lesson I've had in this entire 21-year journey, because my dreams for him were eliminated. And when I went on to have two more children, I realized the power of letting them live the life and the purpose that they're here for and not put mine on them. But gosh, is that a hard thing to do? But when you do it and let them soar, it's extraordinary the places that they'll go.
Now, I've asked this question with other people. When you found he was blind, did you put the big bubble wrap on him to make sure that he doesn't get hurt? Or did you let him experiment and go about himself, or partially born of both, until you finally said, psh, he's a kid, let him do it?
Yeah, you know, there was an element of I let him do the things he wanted, but I am a little bit of a control freak kind of mom and a little bit of a helicopter pilot going on there. Mm-hmm. So I just did the one step ahead of him or two steps ahead of him. At least I tried for a while. Like I would go to the playground and see where the drop-offs were on the climbers, you know, and then walk him through it and then let him have at it because he could memorize real quick. But I got to tell you, around about third grade when all the assistive technology came in, he left me in the dust. I still can't stay anywhere near. Trying to get ahead of Michael is impossible. So I just am constantly sprinting to catch up to all the stuff he does.
Technology is great, and if you ever have failures with it, go grab a kid. They'll fix it for you. So I'm too old to realize to do all that. Now, Mary Fran, let's jump in with yours now. So were you just headstrong, decided to, it's time to move on from what's going with you? You finally wake up and go, this is not what I wanted? And
well, just, you know, for me, this is an interesting thing for me, because when you have a kid who is an addict, you experience equal parts of terror and fury. You're terrified all of the time. And you're also so angry. And a lot of the anger, you're angry at them because the perception is, well, they did this to themselves. Well, the truth of the matter is they may have chosen to, you know, try drugs, experiment with stuff or whatever, but nobody ever wakes up and says, I think I'm going to turn out to be an addict today. Nobody does that. So I think I always had that perception in my mind. Like I realized that this kid didn't choose to be a heroin addict. But for me, the terror is the most overreaching thing at first, because you're constantly afraid for the kid's life. And then what happened for me was, this was kind of my epiphany day, on Mother's Day, because addicts are great liars. I mean, they're so good at manipulating and lying and making you think you're the one that's crazy. You know, when you know there's something wrong and that thing in your gut is saying, this is bad. They somehow manage to talk their way out of it. And by the end of it, you're thinking, oh, well, maybe it's okay. Yeah, it's just complete madness. It's the inmates run the asylum. But for me, on Mother's Day of 2010, we were at my mother's house with my brother's family and their kids and all that. And I had walked out of the room and all of a sudden I heard a commotion coming from the room I had just left. I go back in to see my son sitting on the couch, shaking uncontrollably. So we called the paramedics, and when they came in, they kept saying to him, what did you take? And I'm like, what are they asking him that for? Now, don't get me wrong. I knew David was struggling with things, but I had no idea the depth of what this was. So when we finally got him to the hospital, the doctor, he didn't answer the question until he was in the ambulance out of the house. It turns out that what he took was a pain medication that he had stolen that day because he couldn't get his hands on heroin. And it was very high in acetaminophen. And the doctors told us, first of all, that he was a heroin addict. And second of all, that if they couldn't reverse the effects of that medication, he would need a liver transplant if he made it. What? So that Mother's Day, I spent the night on a little two-seat hospital waiting room bench trying to sleep a little bit. And then the next day, thank God, we got him to the hospital in time and the medicine, the whatever they gave him worked. And that was when I got, excuse my expression, pissed. That was when I got pissed. And I thought, that's it. I am in way over my head. I don't know what the heck I'm doing, but I got to get somebody who can help this kid. And that was when my husband and I switched off. He came to the hospital. I went home and just right away jumped into the internet and found a place where the next day when I went back to the hospital, I said to him, you got two choices. There happened to be a bus going by outside. I said, you can either get on that bus and go to one of your so-called friends' houses and live there and I'll get your stuff to you, or you can get in the car and you're going to rehab because you're not coming home.
The tough love.
Yeah, but you know, I got pushed to it. It was in my mind, but I think what happens is there's something that changes the game in a crisis, and it either changes it to spur you to some sort of action. Or like in Kristen's case, it spurs you to action in the form of looking at it differently. But something happens and you have to take advantage of that moment because that's pivotal. Yeah. And that's where I think both of us found our resilience, by the way, in that moment. That's where we found it. That's where we decided this is not going to continue the way it's going. It's going to change.
And you have to reopen your mind now to what's ahead of you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now you got to be more than two or three steps ahead and to go from there, because Mary Frank and friend, now you have to, you're doing the tough love. You're getting out one way. Neither go. If you're going to do this, go do it with your friends, which is not going to be in our house anymore, or you're going to get help. And so now the tough love is coming in. Now here's where he has to wake up. He's got to determine, make a decision if he really wants to change or not. And he could easily, and plenty of people have done it. I got a friend that played the game with alcoholism, and he's never had a DUI, went through a program just last year and got a DUI this year. So he played the game to get out of the program. So did your son seriously take what you were talking about, or did he play the game? Did you have a backfall and then had to re-step up?
Oh yeah. I'm very fortunate in that he only went to rehab twice, but he did fall off after the first time. And I don't want to say I expected it. I think I did expect it. But I think one of the pivotal things that you're saying, and it goes back to something that Kristen said a few minutes ago, I had to take my idea of how he should live his life away, because for better or worse, and it could have been much worse, He had that choice to make. He could. I said to him, you can decide to live this way. That's up to you. But you're not living this way with us in your life because I'm not doing this anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's a really hard thing to do, I think, both in Kristen's case and in my case, to take what you think is best for your kid. At some point, you have to take that off the table and give them the tools, but then you got to let them either do it or not do it. And gosh, that's a hard thing to do as a parent. And it's, you know, it's hard when anybody faces a challenge. There are pivotal decisions that you have to make.
And you got to give them the tools. And I don't have any children, so I have no say-so in the dogfight and all of this. But still, you got to give them the tools to do. You got to sit back and go, I know what I did was right. I taught them the right way. I can't help what they decide and do. But I can still encourage them to do better in their life. So, yeah, I understand that. Now, Kristen, with your son, with the blindness and everything was going on, did you, with this one now, have him mainstream straight through most of the school system? Did they try to put him into a special education class and let him out two or three times a day or something? I mean, because that's a big fight that I see in some areas. I used to teach, and they would send us kids from certain classrooms, and they'd be in my room knowing they're not learning anything, but their main thing was to be out to be with the people. Right. Not necessary to learn the situation, the class information. And then I'm thinking, but there are some of them that were smart enough, they could do the work. And I'm thinking they should be in a regular classroom with very minimum. So was that a situation you had to fight with the school system? Anything like that?
Yeah. So here's the thing. What I learned from Michael, and I should also let the cat out of the bag, that my second son was diagnosed with the exact same blindness. I have a sighted daughter also. So now I've got two kids entering into the school system and had to deal with that. But one thing that the biggest thing I learned from them was that blindness was not the barrier. It was access to the tools that was the barrier. And I will also say we have a very big blessing here in this journey that my boys are of a blindness that happens to be a very high intelligence blindness also, and there are no other issues going on. So there was no reason, and I think that it's important for people to look at your story, your family, your journey, and what's personal to you. So for me, education was very big for me. I'm a former teacher also. And I knew that the boys had a very high intelligence. So that said to me, they belong in mainstream school. We live in one of the, I think if you look on our school district's website, it probably says it's the greatest school district on the planet. You know? But whatever. So I was able to handpick living here for the specific reason. But when I got there in kindergarten with Michael, it was a total train wreck. They didn't want any parts of a blind child messing with any of their statistics and all of that. So what I was able to do after a lot of kindergarten was a year of a heck of a lot of tears and a heck of a lot of wine, all on my part.
There you go. There you go.
What I ended up doing was I went, and here's another tip for folks. Now, this is in very personal to the blindness journey and education, but it goes across everybody's journey. I went and found, where are they having success? Where in can I go where they are successfully educating blind children? So I also, when I got divorced, who is on the other side of divorce successful in doing what they want, right? So insert your issue here. I went and found a school about an hour from me in Philly that was doing a very good job of educating blind children. And I took their program and built it in my home elementary school. So that my thing with my boys was, since they had no other issues going on and they were very social little guys, I wanted them to have the experience of being in our town with all of the kids in the neighborhood and being in school with them. So their school program looked a lot different. They went very early. They weren't really happy about that, but they never got pulled out of a class. They got one-on-one Braille instruction, and now Michael is at Penn State. He's a junior, just got the President's Award for being in the top 1% of 75,000 kids.
And go ahead and do it. Before we go any further, go ahead and do it. Penn State and put your mug up there. You got to advertise for Penn State. All right, there you go.
I think I can get like some kind of a kickback from them all the time I'm doing, right?
Penn State, if you're listening, we just gave you an advertisement. You're going to send the check in the mail, and I'll split it three ways.
But then, so Mitch, and you know what? It's easy to say, oh yeah, I raised this blind kid successfully. And, you know, people would say he's a one hit wonder, but guess what? My second one came right behind him. My second one doesn't believe, he's like a total middle child. Does not believe in homework, does not believe in extra effort, like all these things, right?
Hey, that's me. I'm a middle child. Yes, I understand that. I understand this one.
There was a period of time where Saturdays he had a rule, you don't wear pants. That
was I thought it was so hilarious. Like, he's hilarious.
I went from like a future NASA astronaut to SpongeBob. Like, those are my two kids.
There you go. There you go.
So anyway, but Mitch landed in the, he's a senior in high school and he's in the top 3% of the country academically. So, you know, the point is I was able to build the education that worked for my boys, knowing, and we talk about this in the Brilliantly Resilient process, that when you align everything with your values, when you get hit with that sucker punch and you immediately consider your action plan based on what your core values are. And I knew that our family's core values were achievement, you know, and multiple other things, and aligned their system with that. And it worked brilliantly, for lack of a better word. It did very well. Was it easy? Absolutely not. There were teachers that wouldn't get on board.
Now what you do, Chris, sorry to interrupt, you say brilliantly and you highlight brilliantly resilient, you see, underneath you, right behind you. So highlight that. So there you go. Brilliantly resilient. That's right. You got to do that on your next shows now. When y'all talk about this stuff, you got to Penn State and brilliantly. So there you go. On your next show, you got to do that.
We go nowhere without our signs.
Hey, that's awesome. Let them probably know what you're doing. That's awesome.
You know, it's funny, Kristen. Kristen really hit on one of the things that when we talk about these sucker punches with people, it, as much as it takes away, it also does give you that opportunity to really hone in on what's important, what is essential to your life that you are not going to compromise on. That's where you start with this whole piece of resilience, and you start with that decision, and it's so important, this decision. Are you just visiting this place of crisis, or are you going to live there? Now that doesn't mean
that goes to. I'm sorry, that goes to. I got to jump in. That goes into a friend of mine, Jan. Her dad, you say it's okay to visit Pityville, but do not move in.
That's exactly right. It's a decision, and that doesn't mean that you don't experience it. Of course, you know, this isn't a Pollyanna thing. This isn't like, oh, I'm going to make the best of this, you know, because it sucks. I mean, these things really are hard. But you can make the decision that you're going to approach it as a victim or a victor. And it is that decision. I'm not going to live in this place. Of course, it's going to affect my life, but it's not going to define it from here on out every single moment.
Exactly. And I think it's okay to go back and poor pitiful me, you know, visit Pityville, because if you do it correctly. You know, if you're trying to move in, that's unacceptable. But I think we go back and visit, and then after we finally wake up for a day or two of being there, then we realize how far we've really come, how much we really advanced from where we were, how much we really improved other people's life, our lives. So I think it's natural to go back. But then let's wake up and see where we've come from there.
Yeah.
Now, ladies, here's a question now. Going through both situations here, and I had the question here and I done forgot it, but going through both situations, how guilty did you feel when things, you know, Mayor Friend, you're going, I gave him the tools, but he still turned out to be an addict and I didn't teach him that, I didn't. And then the same thing, Kristen, your children were born through you. How guilty did you feel that you passed this gene on or whatnot?
Yeah, well, I think that we're also the mayors of Guiltville.
I'm glad you said it, because I'm sitting here going, oh my God. God. Yeah. I mean, you know, certain things, obviously, you can't control. Kristen had no idea what her genetic makeup was or anything like that, but I don't care. That doesn't matter. I don't think. I think there's always a part of you that feels that somehow you contributed, if your children are involved, that somehow you contributed to this. Somehow you contributed to this mess, regardless of, you know, I didn't model that behavior for my son, but I'll tell you this. I went over and over and over in my head. What did I do wrong? And I'm a parent. Of course I screwed up, but I was at the point where I was taking every little thing that I probably coulda, shoulda, woulda done slightly differently. And like, well, that's the thing. Oh, it started there. Oh, it must've been when I did that. If only I hadn't. At some point you have to forgive yourself, release yourself, and go, look, unless I did anything with intent to harm, I have to get out of the way of that. And it's way easier said than done. Everything that we're saying here today is easier said than done.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. But there is a process by which you can do that. And it does start with releasing yourself from that. Don't you think, Kristen?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And I mean, for me, people are probably thinking, well, you know, it's a genetic condition. Where's the guilt? Well, there's a ton of guilt, you know, there, and especially since my relationship with their father didn't work out. So everyone that's going through divorce, I know that you all are sitting there with that heavy heart of guilt that did I do everything possible? Now they're in two homes. Now this one went off the rails. You know, there's a ton of guilt there. But I will say from experience the past 4 years in being the mayor of Guiltville, with a divorce, it really lies in forgiving yourself, getting some very good therapy to work through all that for yourself. And then you can be strong enough to give your kids the tools to look at the situation differently, to change their whole perception. Like when I started saying, we could have very easily stayed in Suckville, Victimville, that our, you know, our family's broken and whatever. And I chose not to do that with them. We chose to look at opportunities for different kinds of vacations, opportunities to spend more time with people on my side of the family. We looked at all the men that are in my life. I have so many brothers and cousins and all that they could learn all kinds of things from. I mean, it's just looking. I've taught my kids to look at those sucker punches as opportunities to grow in some other area. And that is where you start alleviating all that guilt and give them all new tools that they're going to use for the rest of their lives.
I like that. Yes. And now it's time for a commercial. Let me promote my book that is coming out here in the next few weeks that y'all both mentioned. You got to forgive yourself. And in my book, the title is Your Past Doesn't Have a Future, But You Do. Create your future today. And in step one is, you know, the Bible and our parents, we teach you need to forgive other people, you know, where you perceive. I say we have our own perception of being hurt by other people, which probably is we just felt, you know, we felt something, whether they meant it or not. Okay. And felt hurt. Mm-hmm. So we need to forgive them. Other people say, don't let people, you know, run free in your mind. And so, but I also say, you know, we need to forgive ourselves. I mean, if we can't forgive ourselves, then we can't find the help, like you're saying, Kristen, and then we can't go pass it on to other people. So we're constantly putting ourselves down, not forgiving ourselves. Oh, I remember back in 1983, and then, well, that was the year I got hurt, so I don't know why I could have said 83, but the sub thing in me said 1983. But, you know, what example with me. What had happened when I got hurt playing football is I was in the huddle. Our team got the ball back. I left the huddle, told them I was done playing for today. They said, we need someone to run the ball. I stopped and said, I'll come back for one more play. Oh. And hint, that's the name of my first book, One More Play. And so I know I do this shamelessly. And so I go back for the one play, and that's what's put me where I'm at today. And so, And so, you know, I could have easily done the, like you said, the what if, should have, could have, if I'd just kept walking where I'd be today. And so, all right, ladies, y'all are awesome. Y'all, I could tell y'all team done this before.
So, we have done it before.
A little bit together.
There you go. Now, obviously, I could tell y'all both got a great positive mentality, positive attitude and everything. And I have no hesitation in saying, I know this helped you get through your situations. How important for the ones that are negative, went negative, hadn't come back, still hanging in, how important it is that we need to get into that positive mindset. I tell people, sometimes we've got to walk through the fertilizer of life to be able to see that rosebud sometimes. So and so to be positive. So again, how positive do you think we that's helped y'all get through your situation?
You know, I think, again, it starts with making that very first decision that you're not going to live in that place. And when you commit to that, your mind automatically then shifts. It's a mind shift. So it doesn't, I think sometimes when people hear that, oh, you have to have positive attitude, they're exhausted, they're frustrated, they're tired. But people think that big things require big solutions. And Kristen and I have both found that that's not how it works. You don't get big solutions. You get decisions every day, and you work on your values, and you change your perception a little bit every day, and you control the controllables. That's the whole reset with resilience part of this. And then, you know, you go to that, to the rising part where it's, you know, what one action step can I do? It's all about these little things. What one action step? And what are my transferable skills that I have? Everything you have is right there. So it really starts with making that decision that I'm not going to live in this place, and I'm going to look at what I have and find that bit of brilliance in this mess. I mean, that's what I did, Kristen, and you did the same thing.
Yeah. And I will say this, that's how the process came to be, that we figured out that those are the steps. And we'll direct everybody when we're wrapping up here, where they can get a head start on all that from us. But I will say this, I could easily have my memoir be titled The Delirious Optimist, because I just have optimism running through my DNA. And I say that for all of you out there that are listening and watching that do not have positivity running through your DNA. Because here's the thing, when
that would be me too, by the way.
Yeah.
Be me.
When the world shut down last year, I mean, I had a lot of layers to that, being a single mom, you know, income and all those things. I went almost into the pit every single day. I was spiraling. And we decided to do this show, our show Brilliantly Resilient. We went live every single day for 100 days, and then we started to pull back a little bit. And when I tell you, James, I needed that every flipping day. And I am the delirious optimist, because my point to everybody is you have to surround yourself with the right tools and the right people. And sometimes it's hourly, when you're really in the midst of something, when you're sitting in family court and you're looking at what the future is for your children, you have to have like almost minute by minute. I have a group that I text that sends me positive stuff of how I'll get through when it's minute by minute. And then sometimes hour by hour, day by day. So optimism, yes, some of us are born with a healthy dose of it, but all of us need to recharge. You've got to surround yourself with the right people and the right tools to keep the right mindset. And eventually, step by step, you come out of that pit.
And another part of my book that's coming out with the mini course on Your Past Doesn't Have a Future, but yours do. You need to surround yourself with people who's going through what you've been through, because you don't know what to expect. When I first had my injury, I didn't know what spinal cord injury is supposed to do. I met one guy that was spinal cord injury when I was 14 years old, and he was in a nursing home. Couldn't move from his neck down. And I'm thinking, I'm going to be in a nursing home at the age of 19. And so I had to find people that were in my situation so I can learn things that I can do. So exactly. Yeah, that's exactly. You got to surround yourself with people. I forgot who said it, but you know, the old saying goes, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. And so you've got to find people that's gone through what you've been through, so you can get some advice, what to do, what to find out to do, what organizations, what other help, find a mentor, find a coach. And the easiest thing nowadays is this stuff on the end of your fingertips, the internet.
Yeah,
just to do all that.
The tribe is huge in what we talk about. It's huge. And it's not always those first person contacts that, of course, they have a great place in your life. But you can expand your tribe exponentially by doing exactly what you said. You just get online and you find people who have had those experiences and expand your tribe. And there, put your hand up, ask for help. They're the best ones to move you forward with that positive mindset.
They don't know how to help you if you don't ask for the help.
There you go.
So yeah.
They can encourage you. They can suggest things. But until they know specifically what you're needing, they can't really help you at all. Ladies, this has been awesome. I'd love to spend some more time, but I'm ready to wrap her up. This is my time. This has been awesome. Maybe we can do a part two in a couple of months. So
that'd be great.
Y'all have been very entertaining as well as education. So I appreciate it. Now, if y'all go ahead and tell us how we can get a hold of Brilliantly Resilient, and how we can get a hold of y'all and people contact and do what they see if they can, y'all can help them.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, we have on our website, brilliantlyresilient.net. That's brand spanking new. We just added all of the coaching and the programs and all, but I would love everybody to go there. Just right on the front page at the top, you don't even have to scroll. Look, we are all about as minimal work as possible. Life is exhausting, so we make it as easy as possible. But you can go there and get our new free resource that is 5 things to start helping you in this process of being and living brilliantly resilient. And it really is a phenomenal resource that's completely free, because everybody is trying to restart and make 21 a heck of a lot better than 2020. So that's brilliantlyresilient.net. And as I mentioned, some days you just need a resource every single day. We have our podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, we have Brilliantly Resilient. And go on YouTube, because all of our interviews are on our YouTube channel, where you can sit and get all kinds of inspiration to take that next step forward.
Yep. And we have a Facebook community. Go there, Brilliantly Resilient Community. And we have a book as well that will help people get started.
All right. Awesome. Now, and I see the book in the background. It looks great. I like your lettering and the way you got Brilliantly Resilient. I like that up in the back. Y'all have done a great job with your branding. That's awesome. Nice. So, all right. So be sure. And I always tell people, if nothing else, Google Brilliantly Resilient. And I'll have everything in the show notes at the bottom to try to help find for you to find them. Grant, thank you for coming in. Ladies, if y'all can just take one from each one of you, give us a powerful statement on, somebody they're struggling today. We don't have to know them personally, but someone's going on. Someone's going to find this either YouTube or podcast. And so if you can give us a positive message that's going to help them get through today, that would be great. So, Kristen, you want to start us off?
I can tell you from experience that whatever you are in the middle of right now, if you can sit, go somewhere that it's quiet, go, if you love to kick a soccer ball, go out, kick a soccer ball, do whatever it is that you love to do, and think about looking at your situation differently. Can you look at it and find one glimmer of opportunity to change your life in a different direction from the punch that you just got hit with?
Yeah.
Mary Friend.
I would say, there's so many things going through my head, but I think I want to reference something that Kristen said earlier that we say all the time. You have to let go of what you think things should be in order to make room for what they could be. So, again, and that has something to do with the perception too. Let go of what you think it should be and make room for what it could be.
That's a title of a book.
There you go.
Let good what could be to what it should be to what it could be. Yeah, that's the title of a book. Ladies, thank you for coming in. Grant, again, thank you for coming in. Everybody that's coming in on the replay, thank y'all for coming in. And be sure to share this out. Again, y'all know someone that can use it. You don't have to go through an addiction. You don't have to go have blindness. You don't have to have quadriplegic as me. So the basic information, the same tools here are used to help you, to help believe, provide hope and a way to find help. Thank you all for coming in. Hey, do something today, tomorrow, something next week that's going to help you persevere past your paralysis.
Thanks for listening to the Professor of Perseverance podcast for motivation, inspiration, and encouragement. For more information, go to Facebook at Professor of Perseverance. Visit the website at professorofperseverance.com and view the YouTube channel, Dr. James Perdue, Professor of Perseverance.